Jill Anderson is a botanist and plant ecologist. She joins us periodically to talk about phenology, or what's going on in our woods and waters right now. Welcome, Jill.
Hi.
Bobcats. Are we seeing more of them this year?
Well, I'm hearing more.
More reports.
Yeah. And there have been some great photos. I don't know if they're more around or what exactly is going on, but they surely are among us. Given that we've had some of these deep plunges into the cold weather, it got me thinking about how different animals are equipped in different ways to deal with the cold. And that includes among the mammals. We've got, you know, mammals that go under the snow and stay active. We've got mammals like bears that are under the snow and even giving birth right now under the snow. In the case of bears, we don't see that. So they're equipped in a variety of ways to deal with the winter. And then we have these mammals that just stay out and live amongst us with their well-adapted gear, I guess you could call it, for the cold and the snow and all. And so bobcats are surely one of those. They are of the three native cats to Minnesota. They're one, and they are the most common, others being the mountain lion or the cougar and the Canada lynx. And we are fortunate enough to experience all of them to varying degrees. And the bobcat is probably the most common. I think its core of its population in Minnesota, which I guess is estimated these days at about 5,000 animals, is more north central Minnesota, so they would have a higher density of bobcats. But we certainly have them here too, as well as the lynx and the occasional mountain lion. So we're blessed in all regards of feline mammals here. And not surprising that they're common in that we have a lot of good habitat among the cats. They're the most well adapted to our interfacing with wild habitats, you know, with sort of suburban, exurban environments, as well as our natural habitats. They are also have a really big range. So they range from southern Canada all the way to Mexico. And so they're in most states of the contiguous 48. They're a part of the picture. So they're well equipped to deal with our cold weather. Their beautiful dense coats protect them to, they say, 50 below, so they can handle that. They also are known to actually hunker down and hide out in really major winter storms. So among their most favorite kinds of places to linger and include in their territories are really dense brush piles or brushy places. Could be a thick clump of blowdown plus collateral damage around blowdown. Also, something that applies, especially here in northeastern Minnesota, are rocky ledges and talus slopes. And so I can picture a bobcat knowing its territory as well as it does. If it includes a place like that, one of these rocky habitats where you have these recesses in the talus that an animal their size, about twice the size of a typical house cat, could get down into and just hunker down in, kind of under the, somewhat protected by the blanket of snow that's over the surrounding landscape, or digging their way into even some space that would give them some additional protection, and certainly equipped to dig themselves out if it was a heavy snow. And they're also, of course, favor places where there's a good amount of prey, and they're really wide-ranging in their appetites in terms of living prey. So they're not big on scavenging unless they've killed it themselves. So like other big cats, they will kill something and maybe cache it and come back and, you know, feed more than once on it if it's that big. But since they feed on everything from something the size of mice to something the size of a deer fawn, when the fawns are still smaller, or it could even be a debilitated or sick adult deer. I'm sure even a larger, you know, more, not necessarily a fawn anymore, but one that wasn't fully capable of taking care of itself could be a potential prey. Everything in between, snowshoe hares, squirrels, birds. I haven't heard enough reports about this, but I have heard people say that while they show interest in things like suet balls, they don't necessarily want to eat them. And I don't know if that's because it's not that active prey kill kind of thing. It's not a living thing that they're killing and then eating. That's their natural way of living their lives. Or if it's that they don't like the taste. I don't know which it is. But it could be just that it's fun to play with and mess around with, but not as they might check it out, but they're not going to just wolf it down like, say, a Fisher would or a Martin would or some animals that we see. The litters of bobcats, I'll just bring up, they aren't happening now. This is really, we're getting more into the closer to the time when they would be the breeding season. But we may still be seeing kittens from last year out around with their mothers. They stay with the mothers about a year. And I've read a lot of different things about bobcats wide ranging, you know, in their over their range, rather. It sounds like, you know, you can have situations where, because they're the females aren't necessarily reproductively ready at just a single point in the year, it can be more than, it's a wide latitude there. So they might have kittens as late summer, early fall. So they stay about a year. You might see them quite late into the year. And it sounds like the usual way that juveniles end up dispersing into the wider world is when the breeding season comes for their mother, who then is not, you know, willing to let them tag along any longer, and they're out on their own. Their home territories are 5 to 10 square miles. That would be for males, a little bit smaller for females. Male territories tend to overlap multiple female territories, I suppose, ideally. And they can travel quite a bit in just one day. I think what I've read is that they wouldn't be unusual for an adult to go 2 to 10 miles in a night, one night. And they're not strictly nocturnal. They're more what we would call crepuscular. So the hours just before dawn and just through and after dawn, and then the hours just before sunset and then into the early part of the night are when they're typically most active out in search of prey.
Is that because their prey is most active during that time also?
I suppose, or they may, and maybe because they, that's undoubtedly part of it, but also it probably gives them the best advantages to their prey. So it's a great question. Bobcats are not well equipped in terms of their nose or in terms of great speed and endurance. They rely primarily on really keen eyesight. They see about 6 times better than you and me in the dark. So keen eyesight and stealth. So the element of surprise. And then, of course, they come well equipped with killing weapons, right? Yeah, so they rely a lot on stealth. So they hide out. That's why they like these brushy, lots of cover, the kinds of things we probably wouldn't enjoy, you know, trying to push our way through. Great options for hiding out. They, of course, climb trees and can be stealthy that way too, being perched above, watching what's going on, pounce. I think I've read about 10 feet in a leaping kind of maneuver. So they're well equipped to make good use of the predator tools that they have.
How do we tell the difference between a lynx and a bobcat?
Overall, a lynx is bigger than a bobcat. It has longer legs, kind of a little taller. Because they have these longer legs, they look more delicate. So that's the general appearance. Ear tufts. Both species have ear tufts. The lynx's ear tufts are longer than the bobcat's ear tufts.
So what we need to do is have them stand side by side.
Yeah. The lynx have much bigger feet. So if you see a track in the snow, take a ruler, look at your own hand, find something on your hand that you can easily use as a reference that's about 2 1/4 inches long. Then if you see a track, then you know it's a cat track because no claws are showing. It's pretty round, 4 toes, but no claws showing. If you see something you think may be a cat track, then measure it. And if the length of it is 2 1/4 or smaller, then it's a bobcat. To be a lynx, it really should be about 3.5 inches or more long, because they have bigger feet and hairier feet. So they make a bigger track, noticeably bigger track. And then if you get a really good look at the tail, both have the bobbed tail of the bobcat, so about 5 inches long, and a black tip. But on the bobcat, the black tip is only on the top of the tail. If you got a look at the underside of its tail, it'll be all white. Whereas the lynx, the black is on
both
top
sides
and bottom. those are all the things I can think of.
Well, I'm going to be looking very closely at the next cat I see.
But that first impression, does it look long-legged and more
lanky.
So? Yeah, lanky, right. That's a great word, lanky.
Jill Anderson regularly fills us in on current events in the woods. Thanks for talking to us about bobcats.
You're welcome.